I didn't sleep again that night, though occasional slips of dream assaulted me when I slipped into a light doze. In these, I searched an empty room for something precious I knew belonged there. In the periods when full wakefulness pinched me, I wrestled with strategies and second guesses. The prohibition against changing a first answer served me well in university, as it had generations of students before. Now and here, the certainty that change offered me my only hope seemed obvious and suspect and obvious again, switching valence sometimes with every breath. The urge to run to Brown and destroy the arguments I'd made before, show him the real truth behind the data on his hand terminal, warred with the fear that doing so condemned me to life and death in the room. I remembered old comedy routines about intellectuals overthinking problems. I know, but he knows I know. But I know he knows I know, and on until subtlety iterated itself into the absurd. Brown suffered none of it. All that morning he walked through the room, smiling and nodding to our fellow prisoners. Quintana sulked in a far corner of the room, sitting by himself and glowering across the emptiness at us. He stayed too far away for me to make out his features, but I imagined him in a permanent scowl. Alberto tried to engage me in conversation, concerned, I think, by my sullenness. When the doors opened and the guards appeared, carrying our morning meals of textured yeast protein in the spun starch boxes that we ate as dessert, a spike of cold horror split me, and I came to my decision. Brown trotted toward them, beaming. I ran across to him, waving my arms to catch his attention, and coincidentally the guards and Fong's as well. That my action aided Quintana's plan only became clear later. It wasn't my intention. I was wrong, I said, plucking Brown's sleeve like a child imploring his father. It came to me last night I was wrong. No, you weren't, Brown said, his tone impatient. I went over all of it. Not all. There's more. I know more. I can show you. A tall woman with hundreds of tiny black moles dotting her face led the guards. I knew her as I knew all the Belter guards, as a force of nature imposed on us. Still, I'd seen her enough for the familiarity of her face to let me read the curiosity in her. I plucked Brown's sleeve more anxiously, trying to draw him away out of earshot. The conviction that the Belters would give the Martian the worst, not the best, of research seemed self-evident now. I feared letting her hear me say something that might suggest I knew the truth. Brown didn't move, so I leaned in closer to him. It's not an egg, I hissed. It's the support frame for a stable non-locality. Something to pass information, maybe even mass. It only looks biological because it co-opted biological material. For the first time, I saw doubt flicker in Brown's eyes. I hoped the truth would be enough to sway his certainty. Bullshit, he said. I'd done my work too well. Do an implicit structure analysis, I said. Look at the membranes as pathways, not walls. See how the resonances reinforce. The protomolecule opened something. It's not an alien. It's a way for the aliens to talk to us, or to get here. Don't trust me. Look at the data. Brown looked deeply into my eyes, as if he could measure my sincerity from my pupils. A voice behind us rose in a weirdly strangled cry, and I turned toward it. That is the last clear memory I have for a time. I had never been stabbed before. It wasn't at all what I would have guessed. My recollection is of a sudden impact driving me up and off my feet. Very loud shouting, very far away, as multiple voices barked conflicted orders, though to whom I couldn't say. The unmistakable and assaulting noise of gunfire. Lying on the deck, looking up at the empty row of observation windows, convinced that I'd been hit or kicked hard enough to break one of my ribs, then putting my hand to my side and finding it bloody, and reaching the conclusion that, no, I'd been shot. Quintana, 4 meters away, his head and chest mutilated by bullets. I have a vivid image of Fong standing over his body with a pistol in her hand, but I'm almost certain of that memory's falsehood. I can't imagine the Belter guards suffering us to be armed, even if we shared a common enemy. Other shards of my memory of the attack, though more plausible, have nothing I can attach them to. Alberto with his hands in bloody fists, the Belter guards pressing their bodies over mine to protect me or subdue me or stanch the bleeding, the smell of gun smoke, the gritty feel of the floor against my cheek and hands. Perhaps normal people take these things and weave them into a coherent narrative, like making sense of a particularly surreal dream. For me, they simply exist. The prospect of a discontinuous cognitive life holds no terror for me, or, I suspect, for anyone in research. Afterward, I heard the story told, Quintana's battle cry, his rush toward us. According to Navarro, he pushed Brown out of the way in order to reach me. The Belter guards shot Quintana to death, and afterward the mole-speckled woman stood over his body, cursing in the incomprehensible argot of her people and shouting into her radio. Brown, they rushed away, out the door and into whatever rooms they used to protect and isolate him from us. The medical team that treated me arrived quickly, but didn't evacuate me. I lay first on the floor, and then on one of the crash couches. Quintana's improvised knife, a length of steel pried from the base of a couch, inserted just below my ribs on the right, angling up toward my liver. A few more centimeters and my chances of survival would have fallen drastically. But they didn't. I found it difficult to focus on things that might have happened, knowing, as I did, that they hadn't. But that came later. At first I slept in a narcotic cloud, like a physical memory of university. When I woke, Alberto lay curled beside me, his body feeling oddly cold, though in fact it was my fever that made it seem that way. For 2 more days I rested and slept, Belter medics coming both with and between meals to switch out supply packs on the autodock they had strapped to my arm. When I asked them where Brown was, what was happening with him, they answered with evasions or pretended I hadn't spoken. The only information I gleaned in those terrible days was once when I demanded to know, weeping, if he'd gone, and one of the medics twitched her head in an almost subliminal no. I told myself she'd meant that he was still on the station, rather than the equally plausible negatives that she didn't know, or she wouldn't answer, or I shouldn't ask. Hope survives, even stretched to a single molecule's thickness. The room spoke of nothing but the attack during all the time Brown remained absent, even, perhaps especially, when they spoke of something else. Just before lights out, Ma and Coombs fought, shouting at each other for the better part of an hour over whether Ma had taken too long a shower. Bulky, who usually kept to herself, approached Entz, talking tearfully for hours on end and wound up in the hotel with loud and unpleasant-sounding intercourse. Navarro and Fong put together patrols that, in a population now under 36, felt both ridiculous and threatening. All of it was about the attack, though I didn't understand the complexity of it until Alberto held forth on the subject. "Grief makes people crazy," he said. We were sharing a container of white kibble that looked like malformed rice and tasted like the unholy offspring of a chicken and a mushroom. "Grief?" I must have sounded outraged at the thought, and in fairness, I was a little. Alberto rolled his eyes and waved the heat of my reply away. "Not for Quintana. Not for the man, anyway. It's the idea of him. We were 35 people. Now we're 34. Sure, the one we lost was an asshole. That's not the point. It was the same for Cantor. Every time one of us dies, it will be the same. We are all less in ourselves because we're less together. They aren't mourning him. They're mourning themselves, and all the lives they could have had if we weren't stuck in here. Quintana's just a reminder of that." "For whom the bell tolls? Well, that's a thought." 36, I said, and Alberto frowned at me. You said we were 35 down to 34, but there were 36 of us. No one counts Brown anymore, Alberto said. He took a mouthful of kibble, using his index and middle fingers as a spoon, then sucked the food between his cheek and his teeth, pulling out the broth before swallowing the greasy remnant. It was the best way to eat Belter kibble. They would be mourning you if you'd gone, he said and turned to me. There were tears in his eyes. I would be. I didn't know if he meant gone the way they assumed Brown to be already apart from the group, or dead like Quintana, but I didn't ask for clarification. Perhaps leaving the room by dying out of it, or being traded to the Martian, were interchangeable for the people I left behind. I guessed that was Alberto's point. We put the rest of the kibble aside and lay together, his weight on my left to keep the wound in my side from hurting. Between my own discomfort, the uncertainty over Brown's status, and, unaccountably to me, Van Ark and Fong weeping loudly through the night, I slept poorly. And in the morning, Brown came back. When the lights came on and the doors opened, he walked in with the guards. The time he'd spent sequestered had changed him. The others crowded around him, but he extricated himself from them and came to me. The brightness in his eyes reminded me of our best days on Phoebe and Thoth Station. I stood as he approached, and he grabbed my shoulder, pulling me away where the guards and the others couldn't hear us. You're right, he said. It took me 3 days to find the fucker, but you're right. Did you tell them? I did, he said. They confirmed. When I get out, I swear to God, I will— The shout of the Belter guard interrupted us. The large gray-haired man led the group today, and he strode toward us with his assault rifle drawn.
Knigla tue! No talking, sabe?
Brown turned toward the guard. This is the other nanoinformatics. I need to— The guard pushed him aside with a gentleness more dismissive than violence.
You come, you—
The guard said to me, gesturing with the barrel of his gun. My heart bloomed. My blood turned to light and poured out through the capillaries in my eyes and mouth. I became a thing of fire and brightness. Or that was how it felt. Me? I said. But the guards didn't speak again, only formed a square around me and ushered me away. I looked over my shoulder as the doors closed behind to see Brown and Alberto standing together, watching me in slack-jawed astonishment. Morning, I supposed, the lives they could have had. The doors closed on them, or else on me. The guards didn't talk to me, and I didn't engage with them as they led me through the station corridors. The chamber they delivered me to boasted a laminate bamboo table, 4 cushioned chairs, and a carafe of what appeared to be iced tea. At the gray man's nod, I took a seat. A few minutes later, a woman came in. From the darkness of her hair and the shape of her eyes, I knew her family had been East Asian once. From her body and the slightly enlarged head, I knew they were Belters now. Dr. Cortazar, she said. Unlike the others, her accent was as soft as a broadcast feed's talking head. I'm sorry we haven't spoken before. My name is Michio Pa. Pa, I said, assuming from her military bearing that she was not of first-name sort. Her slight smile suggested I'd guessed correctly. The gray man said something in Belter polyglot too fast for me to follow, and Pa nodded. Am I correct that you've had an opportunity to review the same data as Dr. Brown? I folded my hands in my lap, squeezing my knuckles until they hurt. He let me look at it, yes? Were you able to draw any conclusions? I was, I said. Pa poured out glasses of tea for the both of us and then pulled up a virtual display. I recognized the data structures as I would have a lover's face. What do you make of it? I felt the trembling as if it rose up from the station itself and not my own body. I drew in a shuddering breath. Based on the perfusion rate data and the internal structures, I believe the latent information within the protomolecule is expressing something similar in function to an egg. Her smile pitied me. Walk me through that. I did, recounting for her all that I'd already said to Brown, back when I'd meant to make him out the fool. I wore my invisible jester's cap well. I capered and grew excited. By the end, I managed to have convinced myself that everything I said was possible. That the gate, I never called it that, might also be an egg. The most effective lies, after all, convince the liar. When I finished, she nodded. Thank you. You can't give them Brown, I said. He did liaison duty. The real work belonged to us. Send me instead. We're considering how to go forward. She rose and I moved to her, taking her hand. If you put me in the room again, he'll kill me. She paused. Why do you say that? He's from the research group. So are you. It took me long seconds to put words to something so obvious. It's what I would do.